She nods slowly. Yes. And no, she says. Then she's gone. Mike comes back. We chat. All is well. Business is good. Things are calm. He's sorry my stay in Stonemouth can't be longer, but, well, that's just the way things are. The front door has only just closed, and I'm halfway up the garden path heading back to the street when I hear the door open again. It's Angelica, dressed now, in tight jeans and a scoop-neck tee. Here, she says, thrusting a container into my hands. Mum baked this morning. Thanks. Welcome. Then she turns and goes. I open one end of the container and stick my nose in, smelling flour both baked and not, and a faint hint of strawberries, a scent that always takes me back to the Ancrum family's estate and a succession of summer days, half my life ago. Malcolm Henry, wee Malky, was just one of those kids. He came from one of those families you needed a diagram and some drafting skills to describe properly. There was a husband, wee Malky's dad, but he was in Peterhead Prison, where he'd been since shortly after wee Malky was born. The only way to get wee Malky really upset was to diss his dad. Callum Murston once asked him if his mum had moved to Stonemouth to be handy for Peterhead in the prison, and wee Malky just went berserk. He flew at Callum like something out of a catapult and had to be prized off him. Callum was left bruised and with a badly bitten ear. He clearly wasn't happy about getting attacked like that, and a couple of playtimes later, wee Malky got marched round the back of the bike sheds and given a good kicking by Callum and his older brother Murdo. The Ancrams had children within our age range. We were all about 13 or 14 at the time. Hugo Ancram was a lanky boy with fair hair, blue eyes, fine features, and an English accent. That was how to wind Hugo up. Accuse him of being English because he talked the way upper-class Scots who've been to private schools tend to. Go on, Hugh, call us oikes! Hugo had been given a lot of paintball gear for his birthday that year. A dozen guns, sets of body armour and face masks and so on. Now look, he said one day, my brother's supposed to be tagging along today. If anybody's got a problem with that, well, tough. Whatever, Hugh, Ferg said, shrugging. No probs, Josh McAvett agreed. Aye, Callum Murston said. Hugo looked relieved. Good. Now, boys, this is George, his mother told us, leading him by the hand. Hugo's brother was nearly 20, but his mental age was stuck at 5. I hope you'll take good care of him and play nicely. Do you promise? We all agreed that we did. Don't you worry, missus, wee Malky said. You can depend on us, ma'am, Ferg told her. The sun was still high over the hills as the afternoon started to draw to a close and we set up for the last game of the day. A complicated arrangement of scoring across the various skirmishes and the different team combinations had resulted in wee Malky coming out last, so he had to be the prey. Basically, he got a 2-minute start and then we all chased him. If he lasted for half an hour or got back to his bike without getting splattered again, he'd won. George's deep voice rumbled into action.
May I have a gun too this time, please?
He was the least paint spattered of us, though even he'd taken a couple of stray hits, partly due to his sheer size, you had to suspect. No, George, Hugo told him. Callum lost wee Malky and blundered off into a bog, getting very annoyed. Most of the rest of us set off up the same path, while Hugo and George and Felpie took the most direct route back to the house. This party of three was halfway back when they heard a lot of shouting uphill and assumed that wee Malky had been spotted. Hugo left George in Felpie's charge and climbed a handy tree to take a look. When he got back down, George had gone.
You were supposed to look after him, Hugo roared at Felpie.
Aye so, I told him not to go. What else could I do, man? He's a monster.
There he is, Josh yelled.
Josh had spotted wee Malky running along the top of the dam wall, sprinting like a hare for the far side where the overflow was. Down at the bottom of the grassy slope, stepping down the half metre into the concrete channel and then wading upstream to the foot of the overflow slope was George, holding, in both hands, a sword almost as big as he was.
Where'd that come from?
Felpie breathed beside me. My throat didn't seem to be working properly. House, I managed to say, gulping, remembering the circles and fans of weapons arrayed across its walls. Nobody followed Hugo down the grassy dam. I suppose that sword, suddenly so adult compared to our play guns, had sent a chill through all of us. Everything felt very still, as though the air had coagulated around us. While we were all watching this, Callum raised his gun and fired, hitting Wee Malky in the head with a yellow squirt of paint. Wee Malky yelped and fell, splashing into the water on the overflow side, one arm reaching out to try to grasp the round stones at the summit, but failing. He started sliding down the slipway, arms flailing as he tried to stop or slow himself.
"It's over!" Callum roared down at George. "Put the blade down!"
Wee Malky sounded hoarse with fear as he raced down towards the slipway foot. George stood there, the sword raised above his head.
"George!"
Hugo screamed. Callum screamed too and started firing at George. Wee Malky sort of draped round a stone pillar, a step away from George, who turned and brought the sword down from high above his head, whacking into Wee Malky's body, making it jerk. George paused, straightened, raised the sword high again. We never saw George again. He went back into a secure unit and stayed there until he died a couple of years back. People blamed Callum, partly, though he always swore he had been trying to think ahead and had shot Wee Malky purely so that George would accept that the game was over and put down the sword. Only Ferg and I really blamed Felpie. He works for Mike McAvitt now. We all got counselling. I hate to think how bad my nightmares might have stayed without it. I spent the evening with my parents. They wanted to congratulate me properly for joining the partnership. Mum drove us out to the Turry Inn, near roadside of Durrans on the Lonestone Road. Fine meal, fine wine. Quietly pissed, but feeling like a child again, I watched through the side window of the Audi as a waning moon, like a paring from God's big toenail, flickered between the black trunks of sentry trees, ridging lines of distant hills.